a joke that I have always loved, but always have to look up to make sure that I'm getting it right. And when I looked it up again this week, I discovered that in a 2005 poll in the United Kingdom, this joke had been voted the funniest religious joke of all time. It goes like this. I was walking across a bridge one day and I saw a man standing on the edge, about to jump. I ran over and said, "Stop! Don't do it!" "Why shouldn't I do it?" he asked. "Well," I said, "there's so much to live for."
"Like what?"
"Well," I said, "are you religious?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Me too. Are you Christian or Buddhist?" "Christian," he said. "Me too. Are you Catholic or Protestant?" He said he was Protestant. "So am I. Are you Episcopalian or Baptist?" "Baptist," he said. "This is incredible. So am I. Are you Baptist Church of God or Baptist Church of the Lord?" "Baptist Church of God," was his answer, "which I am too. Are you original Baptist Church of God or are you Reformed Baptist Church of God?" He said he was Reformed Baptist Church of God, which I am also. So I asked, "Are you Reformed Baptist Church of God Reformation of 1879 or Reformed Baptist Church of God Reformation of 1915? And he said, "Reformed Baptist Church of God Reformation of 1915. And I said, "Die, heretic," and pushed. Funniest religious joke. There's one thing that everybody seems to be united on these days, and that's the fact that we're so divided. Whether we're talking about the country, a local community, our families, it seems that everybody's taking sides. Liberal and conservative, women and men, young and old, pro-Kavanaugh and anti-Kavanaugh, Laurel and Yanni, people who get that joke and people who don't. And it seems that we humans have always been tribal by nature, have always dichotomized us and them. After all, we humans are social animals by nature, and we are decidedly ill-equipped for living in isolation, ill-equipped both physically and by temperament. Simply put, we need one another. By living in groups with others, our ancestors were able to share resources and were better able to protect themselves from threats. And because we evolved in small groups, there was an adaptive advantage to being able to discern who is in your group and who isn't. Us and them isn't a new phenomenon. At one point, our survival as a species depended on it, so much so that it's as if it was encoded in our DNA. And many people think that religion, writ large, is one of the most effective ways we humans have ever devised for perpetuating the perennial problem of partitioning the saved from the damned. Look at all the religious wars that have ever been fought and that are still being fought. And you can see all the proof, if proof is what you're looking for, that religion is dangerously divisive. Some people say that it's really the only purpose religion has, to divide one from another. Last week, I threw out my planned reflections because I couldn't imagine not speaking to the blatant display of our culture's misogyny that was taking place in those Senate hearings. Coincidentally, or not, for more than a month, I had been planning to speak this morning on the roots of sexism and misogyny in the Judeo-Christian traditions, which can arguably be said to be the foundation of Western cultures. Well, this week I read something that provides a clear bridge between these two explorations. In defending Kavanaugh, and more to the point, attacking Dr. Ford, someone tweeted, "Well, what did you expect? Women have been nothing but trouble for men ever since Eve gave that apple to Adam." Strong argument there. There's no question that the Jewish and Christian scriptures have been used in some grossly damaging ways. The Apostle Paul wrote to the fledgling church in Corinth, for instance, "Women should remain silent in the churches. They are not allowed to speak, but must be in submission, as the law says." That's just one example of what the biblical scholar Dr. Phyllis Tribble called texts of terror, which is the title of her really important 1984 book. To take another example, there's this time from the Gospels, where there's a story told in the book of Matthew about a Canaanite woman who desperately pleaded with Jesus to heal her daughter. Jesus is recorded as saying essentially that he'd come to save the Jewish people and that he wouldn't waste a healing on a non-Jew. The text actually reads, "It is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." Saw a few eyebrows go up. And then, of course, you have Eve. Most people know at least the broad strokes of the myth. Adam and Eve were living in the literal, actual Garden of Eden. The character of God tells them that they can do anything they want, enjoy everything they see, but that the one thing they absolutely must not do is to eat any of the fruit from the tree in the center of the garden, the tree known as the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Well, wouldn't you know it that the devil, in the form of a slippery serpent, convinces Eve, that silly woman, that it's perfectly okay to eat that fruit, which of course she then does. And then she tempts Adam so that he also breaks God's one and only limit. And for this, the two are unceremoniously evicted from the garden, and we've been locked out ever since. And as if to overly reinforce Eve's role in all of this, her responsibility for all of this, biblical commentators have over the centuries said that Eve tempted, beguiled, lured, corrupted, persuaded, urged, used wicked persuasion, led into wrongdoing, proved herself an enemy, used guile and cozening tears and lamentations to prevail upon Adam. So what do you expect? Women have been causing trouble for men ever since Eve gave Adam that apple. It's passages like these that have led many to argue, even many you use to argue, even some you use here to argue, that religion is ultimately irredeemable, since it is forged in and reinforces patriarchy, among other things. And it's not just the Jewish and Christian traditions. Even among Buddhists, in the sutras, there's a description of the signs of the Buddha, which include hair in a certain pattern, skin of a certain color, a particular type of genitals. In other words, men only need apply. I would argue that these are perversions of religion's truest, deepest message. I love verse 49 of the Holy Quran, in which it says, "Oh humankind, we have made you into nations and tribes that ye may know each other, not that you may despise each other." We're different, yes, but we're different in order to learn from one another. built into the very fabric of the Muslim faith, and I'd argue the fabric of any of our human faiths. There is this sense that we are, as I often put it, one human family on one fragile planet in one miraculous universe, bound by love. Dr. Tribble's book, Texts of Terror, is not just a litany of texts that have been used to oppress and subjugate particularly women. It's also an offering of ways to reclaim what she believes, as do I and many others, the underlying message of unity and equality, the real foundational message of faith. Now, in literal and in literary and biblical studies, there's something called the hermeneutics of suspicion. It says essentially that we should pay really close attention to what a text doesn't say, what it leaves out. So that passage from Paul in which he tells women to sit down and be quiet, well, that's actually really cool because it provides proof that in the early Christian church, women were vocal leaders. Because why else would he have to tell them to sit down if they weren't standing up? And why would he have to tell them to stop talking if they weren't already talking? And that interaction between Jesus and the Canaanite woman in which he calls her a dog, well, that story continues with the woman responding that even dogs eat the scraps that fall from the table. And the story says that stopped Jesus in his tracks, that he turned and praised her faith and no doubt determination and powerful sense of self as being greater than any he had seen among his own people. And he heals her daughter. Actually, he says that her faith healed her daughter. So the story can be read not only as one of a man disparaging a woman, although that is there, but the story is really about a strong woman changing Jesus' awareness and the course of his teachings. Because the author of Matthew records that from that time forward, Jesus never again talked about his mission being to only one group, but rather to the whole world. Because of that woman, tribalism was replaced by a recognition of our common humanity. What about Eve? Well, that story can be read as showing women to be God's ultimate creation, since she was created after Adam, and Adam was created after the animal. So if there's a hierarchy of creation, she's it. Additionally, the text says nothing at all about Eve tempting Adam. Instead, it says simply that she gave some to her husband and he ate. Nothing more. Some say that, like most parents, God knew that prohibiting eating the fruit of the tree was the best way to guarantee that they would actually do so. That it was all part of the plan, because the knowledge of good and evil is part of what makes us human. We have the ability to discern right action from behaviors that hurt and harm. And with that knowledge, we can consciously choose which to do. There's one thing everybody seems to be united on these days, and that's that we are so divided. And while that may have been an evolutionary benefit in the early days of our species development, it is a danger to us today. We are fundamentally social animals, and if we evolved in small groups today, we must absolutely recognize that we live on a very small planet. And that continuing to divide humanity into us and them will not keep us safe. It will guarantee our destruction. So what will save us? What the story I read earlier was all about, kindness. One of our hymns has the line, "Kindness can heal us." And it may, in truth, be the only thing that can. Whether on the interpersonal level or the level of nations. Each little thing we do goes out like a ripple into the world, Ms. Albert said to her class. Each kindness makes the whole world better. Divisiveness may be encoded in our DNA. But we could say, thanks to the mythical Eve, we can choose to continue to follow patterns that no longer serve to keep us safe, or instead, to embrace our common humanity. We need to learn that we are all of one tribe, and we need to learn how to be kind to one another.